Vishamda, lavatenu velanu, shelo echad bilvad, amadaleinu lechalotenu, shelo echad bilvad, amadaleinu lechalotenu, ela. שבכל דור ודור עומדים עלינו לחלותינו אלא שבכל דור ודור עומדים עלינו לחלותינו והקדוש ברוך הוא מצילנו מידם והקדוש ברוך הוא מצילנו מידם ואיש עמדה לאבותינו ולנו the following things stood by our forefathers and us שלוח אחד בלבד עמד עלינו לחלותינו. It's not only one that wants to destroy us. I was crossing the street this morning. There was an Arab at the light, an Arab woman, and then her light turned green, so she stepped on the gas and she just brushed by my thigh and didn't run me over and laughed and kept driving. I looked at it and I said to myself, she doesn't know me and I don't know her, right? But she wants me dead. It's not only one person that wants us dead. When we sit at the Seder, my kids look out the window and we see Kalandia. Kalandia is a place that if a Jew walks in, he's dead. He's been there, yeah, with a lot of guns and tanks. Yes. We are living the way we've been living throughout history. From the time of Avraham Avinu, there are many people that want us dead. It's not one, it's not two, it's many. The average Egyptian wants the Jews dead. The peace treaty has nothing to do with the average Egyptian on the street. The Syrians, the Iranians, the Iraqis, the Jordanians. Look around you. If a Jew shows up and says, I'm a Jew, in many places of the world, he will find himself dead. And people will applaud. This is our existence. This isn't something new. The thing that has stood for our forefathers and us is the covenant with Avraham Avinu. Not only one has tried to annihilate us. Every generation they try to annihilate us. And Hashem saves us. About 20 years ago, they found a mass grave in Europe. And they realized that there was a village which woke up one day and decided to kill all the Jews in that village and just make a mass grave and take over their houses and cover it up. So I mentioned this to my grandfather, and my grandfather said to me, if I had strength, I could take you through Europe and show you numerous villages that did that. It was a well-known thing that in Europe this happened more than one time and in more than one place, that the villagers decided to get together once they saw the Nazis had come to power. They decided, it's only a matter of time till they come to our neck of the woods. Why should we wait for them? Let's make sure we get the wealth of the Jews. And so more than one village did this exact same thing, got together and decided we will do the job and that way we will get the wealth. And so my grandfather told me it was known throughout Europe that this happened in many places. People had lived peacefully and employed their neighbors, and suddenly their neighbors had turned on them in one night. This, it's not just the Arabs, no. And that's what the Vehi Shamda tells us. So whenever I read the Vehi Shamda, it's a very chilling song. On the one hand, the song says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzilenu Miyadam. Tonight we recount the fact that Hashem saves us as a people from them. We also recount the fact that throughout our history, they've been trying to annihilate us. That's a scary existence. We had a student here who came from Europe. He was a politician in Europe. He might be in the parliament today. I don't remember which country, but he was like on his way up in politics. And he studied by us, and then during the break, he decided to go to Jordan on vacation. So he said, I have a European passport. No, I'm Jewish. He went with a bunch of friends, and he went to Jordan. He was driving down the highway, and a car was stopped. They had a flat or something on the side of the highway. And a kid, one of the kids from that family, walked out from behind the car, in front of his car, as he was speeding down the highway. He couldn't stop. He killed the kid. he was taken to prison. And as he was whisked away to prison, his friends immediately took anything that identified him as a Jew and hid him. His Israeli passport, everything. All the things the police found was European. Because if they knew he was Jewish, he'd be dead. Mm-hmm. Wait a second, it wasn't his fault. The kid stepped in front of his car on a highway. What could he have done? Doesn't matter. This is our existence till today. So it's a chilling thought, this idea. He made it out safely. I'm saying that his consulate got involved, the Israeli consulate got involved. He spent a month or more in prison, and then he made it back. But coming back to our story. So we're going to go back to the first person who tried to annihilate the Jewish people. Go remember, there was a man, Lavan the Aramean. He let the Jew marry his daughter. And he still wanted him dead. Pharaoh said, let me kill the boys, and the girls will save for prostitution throughout Egypt. But his intention, as bad as it was to leave an ember of the Jewish people alive. He meant to use and abuse them. But at the end of the day, he only wanted to kill the boys. Lavan wanted to kill everyone, even though they were his own grandchildren. Shneimar, the verse says, Arami oved avi. The Aramean wanted to destroy my father, Yaakov. And then after Yaakov escaped, Lavan the Aramean, Vayered Mitzrayma, Yaakov went down to Egypt, right? Vayagol sham b'mteimat. He lived there modestly, small in numbers. And over there, Hashem made him into this great, awesome, mighty nation. So now we're going to take that's a pasuk that describes Yaakov Avinu and analyze every word in the pasuk. Vayered Mitzrayma, Yaakov went down to Egypt. Anusar pi adibur, he was forced. Hashem told him to do it. A Jew doesn't live chutzarts unless he has to. A Jew doesn't leave to live in chutzarts unless he has to. Yaakov didn't want to go to chutzarts, even though there was money there, even though there was parnasah there, even though there was food there. Hashem told him to, so he went. Vayagol sham. And by the way, this is a theme that you guys have to give over. One of the weak links that a chozer b'tshuva has, especially when they make aliyah, is that the kids grow up with an affinity for chutz laretz. Mm-hmm. Their grandparents are there, their uncles are there, they see pictures from there, they hear from you about it. So in the Seder, you could bring it as an underlying theme. Look at how lucky we are. Yaakov Avinu only went to chutz laretz when he had to. Vayagol sham. Yaakov was in chutz laretz as a stranger. He's a sojourner. Yaakov didn't go to settle in Egypt. It's like they asked the Chafetz Chaim, you know the story, a guy visited his house. He saw that he had very simple things in his house. He didn't have fancy furniture. So he was a guest at the Chafetz Chaim's house, and he asked the Chafetz Chaim, why don't you have any fancy furniture? Why don't you get nice stuff over here? So the Chafetz Chaim says, you have a good question. Why didn't you bring fancy stuff? You're staying at my house. Why didn't you bring a fancy linen and a fancy bed and a fancy chair with you? So he said, I'm only a guest here. Chafetz Chaim said, so am I. So in Chutz Laretz, it's like when I visit Chutz Laretz, it always shocks me. People build fancy houses. What are they doing here? They're only guests there. We're supposed to view Chutz Laretz as a temporary place. We're not living there. We were supposed to uncover the matzahs, which I always forget to do. So I'm living up to my tradition. You should know that in the Machzor Vitri, Rashi's student records that one year they were busy in the Seder talking and learning and eating and talking and learning, and then they realized they forgot to eat afikoman. So if in Rashi's house it could happen, it should calm us down. We stick to tradition as best as we can, but if we get caught up with our discussion of the Seder and we forget something, don't get panicked. It happens in the best of houses. Yaakov didn't go to become a part of Egypt. He went to be a sojourner. So we're telling the kids, here's how the story of Mitzrayim began. It began with going down with the intention, I'm just going to be a guest here. Right? My parents went to Chutz Laretz for a year to be on Shlichut. It's been 3 decades since then. And their children and grandchildren are still there. It was shlichut. We were sent there to help develop an Israeli business. And I'm the only one of my siblings who are here. I hope that'll change. So sometimes people go to Chutz Laretz and they think I'm just visiting. Yaakov Avinu said, I'm coming for a short time. Shenemal's the pasuk says, V'yomrul paro. They said to Pharaoh, Lagu baritzmanu, we came to be here as sojourners. There's an economic problem. There's no grazing for the sheep. So let us settle in Goshen because we're here only for a short time. That's what they thought when they entered Egypt. They went down to Egypt with few people. We went down numbering only 70. Now we're like the stars of heaven. You tell the kids, look at how we started. Yaakov Avinu was one. He had four wives. He had 12 sons. He went down to Egypt, 70 people. And three generations later, with 2 million. You know, when we went to Mitzrayim, it's very tempting when you go to Chutzarts to cut your pace, take on a name like Jack, and put on a baseball cap, and be like one of them. No, the Jews stuck out. Everyone knew they were Jews. So today, I'm not saying you have to risk your life in different places in Europe if it's obvious you're a Jew, so it's dangerous. But then there are places where it's not dangerous. And the Jewish people in Egypt didn't hide their identity. That's what kept the ember going. The Jews stuck out. Atzum, they were mighty. Varav, we'll come back to that in a second. Etc. So what's going on here? This is a scary scene if you think about it. Everyone has sextuplets, right? Everyone has six kids at a time. You're walking down the street. Imagine you see six faces like this. All of them identical twins. And they're all big. When I say big, I mean big. And muscular. So you see six guys like him, big and muscular, walking down the street, twin brothers. And they're big. They're the most formidable soldiers in the Egyptian army. And so now the Egyptians feel threatened because the Jews, they don't get the Egyptian names, they're not talking the Egyptian language, they don't change their clothing, they're a separate group onto themselves, and they're all big, muscular, and they're growing in rapid numbers. The Pasuk says, the Egyptians did evil to us. They afflicted us. They gave us hard labor. The Egyptians said, let's outsmart them. This was planned. It didn't just happen. Part of what the Torah is telling us is that the Egyptians planned how we're going to do it. We know that Hitler had a plan how to break the Jews, how to make them different. It's the cartoons, it's the propaganda, it's the Kristallnacht, it's an evolvement towards killing the Jews. Pharaoh was doing it first. Pharaoh had a plan. And they sat with their advisors to figure out how can we outsmart them. Because they said if the Jews multiply at a time of war, they could join our enemies and they could just destroy us and get out of here. They tortured us. The Pasuk says, they set up taskmasters whose job it was to afflict the Jew. That's your job. Break him. They said, let's oppress them in their suffering. That means the Egyptian would come to a Jew and say, start digging. 15 hours later, he'd come back. And the Jew's sweating bullets. And he didn't dare stop his work. And the Egyptian says, oh, interesting. Now put all that dirt back in. So the Jew spent this whole day doing one thing. And then he makes them undo it. The whole point? Break them. Break their spirits. But even Aremis cannot le Pharaoh, they built treasure cities for Pharaoh at Pitom et Ramses. They built Pitom. Pitom was on quicksand. They built, and the next morning they'd see it sinking, everything they built. They told them, build it. That's why it was called Pitom. That it was built on the P of Tehom, on the mouth of the depths. That whatever they built kept sinking, and people would sink and die. They told them, build on the quicksand. And Ramses comes from the word Lerases, to destroy. They put them on a fault line, and they said, here we want you to build. And this way, as the Jews built, there were tremors, and they knew the buildings would constantly collapse, and the Jews would have a lot of casualties. And when the Jews left Mitzrayim, our tradition is that we left as a people that were maimed. Those who made it out alive, some were missing eyes, some were missing legs, some were missing hands. We left Egypt a very dismal people. They gave us hard work, as the Pasuk says. They gave us parech. That's what we described. Labor that's intent is to break the person. Now, at the Seder, we said technically you could drink. From our end, practically, in order not to miss our bracha, The truth is, if we miss our bracha, we'll make another bor pre'agavna, and then the Ashkenazim will do like the Ashkenazi custom. Okay, because 72 minutes are passing. Vanitzak el Adonai Elohei Avoteinu, and we yield to Hashem, the God of our fathers. This is a breaking point. Very often as a Jew, you feel like, how could I turn back to God if I've left Him? And at some point you have to realize, go back to the God of your fathers. Go back, He's waiting for you. Hashem heard our voices, He saw our affliction, He saw our burden and our oppression. El Adonai Eloi Avoteinu, we yell to Hashem, the God of our fathers. Moshe Namaz, the pasuk says, "Vayivay mimalbim emehalnel mitzam enchuv neisam enavodah veizaku v'tan shavtam lelukim inavodah." The Jewish people yelled; they didn't know what to say. They just cried. The greatest prayer is a prayer without words. You're always supposed to try and express yourself, and sometimes it's good to just cry. It's good to just say, "Rabbi Shalom, help me. You know what I need." Vayishma Adonai et kolenu, Hashem heard our voice, Moshe Nema, Vayishma Elokim nagad ames kolim et b'utot avam titzak v'et Yaakov, Hashem heard their cry, and He remembered His covenant, Vayalton yeinu, Hashem saw our afflictions, Apushut derech eretz, that's that the people left their wives. They stopped living like husband and wives, Moshe Nema, Vayar Elohim et b'nei Yisrael, Vayed Elohim, Hashem saw, and Hashem knew what no one else could know, that the men would come home at night, and their wives would try to be intimate with them, and they'd say, leave me alone, and they'd say, come, let's be together. And the husbands would say, what's the point? We're lost. We're finished. In an hour, I'm going to have to go back to work. I don't have strength. They stopped intimacy completely. The men broke. So the Jewish people were at a risk. The spirit of the men had broken. Until that point, the women could keep arousing them. As bad as it was, they'd give them a massage. Now remember, the women were doing men's work. The men were doing women's work. Who worked harder? The women. Who broke? The men. That's the way we are. You should know that's always the way it is. Women are much more powerful than men. It's we might have the muscles, but they have the stamina. And so what? Whatever. Until this point, the women could keep us going. The women kept the men going. They'd bring mirrors out as the men were lying there, both broken and bruised, and they'd bring warm water, they'd cook water and give them some fish. We said sometimes they get fish in their water, they'd give them fish to eat and warm water, and then they'd take some of that water and massage their backs. Remember, the women were working harder than the men, but they didn't give up. And then they'd take a mirror and they put their arm around the guy and say, look at the mirror, who's more pretty, me or you? And the guy would say, leave me alone. And she'd say, no, look. And finally she'd arouse him. And then she'd say, I'm waiting for you. And he'd say, we're out in the field. What, are we going to be like animals? And she'd say, see over there? There's a little ditch between the two fields. Let's go there. No one will see us. And they'd go over there and they'd be intimate. And that's how the Jewish women kept the Jewish people alive. The men broke. Now this, we don't tell the little boys at the Seder, right? Yeah. Telling you guys as grown men. Hi, Benny.
Technical question. At one point we said that the men were doing the work of the women, which I guess would be the cooking and the cleaning.
No.
No, I'm saying in the other point.
Fashioned.
I'm saying that another point we're saying they're building houses.
Right.
Which isn't traditional women work.
Right.
So
I guess they did both. Sometimes they'd give them women work to break them, and sometimes they'd give them backbreaking work to break them. Sometimes they tell him, go out and bring me a bear, so that the Jew would risk his life trying to capture a bear. Sometimes they'd say, go get me a lion. Sometimes they'd say, now I want you to sit and clean all my family's clothing of lice. And they'd sit there all day picking out lice, and by the time they came home, they were covered with lice. And sometimes they'd say, I want you to comb my girls' hairs. I want you to sweep the house. They'd make them do women labor, which to a man breaks him.
Is that better than hunting bears?
Oh no, I'm saying all of these, the Medrash says, were done.
I see.
Some people were killed and maimed hunting bears, meaning they sent them to do stuff which would maim them or kill them. Ve'etamaleinu elu abanim, our affliction, our burden is the children. Kmo shenemar kol ben hayilod ha'yarot tashkuf kol habat techayun. The pasuk says every male child was thrown into the Nile, and all the daughters were kept alive to be taken for forced prostitution. So that's our burden. There's some people can handle all kinds of oppression, but their children, that's what they can't handle. There was once a spy that the state of Israel, she wasn't really a spy. There was a woman who was evading the state of Israel. You guys heard of Yosele? Right? The woman who had taken Yosele into hiding. There was a kid who, in a nutshell, there was a very famous French spy, a woman who outsmarted the Mossad over and over again. And when they finally caught up to her, they couldn't break her. Everything they did to her, they couldn't break her until they caught her son. And when they started torturing her son, that's when she broke. So a person can handle many things, but their kids is something that's destroying to a person. A relative of mine lost his son. His son was kidnapped by Arabs and murdered. And he once told me, he said to me, he said, I had back pains before my kid was murdered. Ever since then, I don't have back pains. He said, the pains I have, thinking of what my son underwent, made it that I don't sense anything else. I don't sense my back pains. He said he never had back pains ever since then. He said the other pain overwhelms everything else. The pasuk says over here, Ve'etamaleinu, you know what our burden was? Elu abanim. When a person sees their own child being murdered, when they know their daughters are being raised for forced prostitution, that was the burden on the Jewish people. The work, that wasn't the burden. The children was the burden. Yes, sir.
Not to be a little dark here, but they're saying, you know, they're doing all these terrible things to the Jews, saying if his end goal was to kill all the Jews, wouldn't it just be simpler to just kill all the Jews?
According to the Medrash, Paro needed to be careful not to cause a rebellion. The Egyptian people, and I guess the slaves in Egypt, had to see a justification for what was happening. Just like when Britain wanted to put down the Indians in India, right? So Gandhi, the way he won was by causing the British to feel like they didn't have legitimacy. You see, the same thing happened in Syria. What happened with Arab Spring? What really happened is they reached a point where people felt like there was no more legitimacy for what was going on here. Even the most powerful king knows that he has to keep his subjects feeling like there's legitimacy. Why did Iran lose? Because the Iranian soldiers wouldn't shoot at the rebels. In the Iranian Revolution, the Iranian soldiers didn't feel there was legitimacy to shoot at fellow Muslims. So, what happened? You know, Ayatollah Khomeini took over, and then they had no problem shooting the other right? And that's been the story of Iran ever since. But when a government loses its legitimacy in the eyes of the people, then the people don't feel they can do stuff. What Pharaoh was doing was taking a people who were considered the chosen people in Egypt, the wise people of Egypt, the brothers of the king Yosef, and slowly shifting them in the perception of the Egyptians to be the lowest of the low. And he succeeded. It reached a point where he could get away with it. I'm saying, but he also had to undergo a process. Our pressure, our oppression, that's the pressure. Now the Egyptians are oppressing them. Pressure, pressure, pressure. When a person's under pressure, that makes everything worse. You could deal with hard labor, but when someone's yelling at you, why didn't you do it? No, no, no. That's one of the most annoying things you could hear. Someone's yelling at you, now it's annoying. Now it's hard to work. And if someone keeps doing it to you, that destroys a person. Hashem took out of Mitzrayim with a powerful hand, with an outstretched arm, with great awe, with signs, with wonders. Hashem took out of Egypt, not an angel, not a seraph angel, not a messenger, Hashem in His glory Himself. Shneimaros the verses. Hashem says, I will pass through Egypt. I will punish the Egyptians, the man, the cattle. All the gods of Egypt will be punished, says Hashem. Hashem says, I'm passing through Egypt. So that's a very important idea. Right? That's a very important idea. Your kid says, Abba, they're picking on me in the playground. Abba, they're picking on me in the playground. You say, okay, I'm going to tell your brother to go with you to the playground. So the kid says, but they might beat up my brother. So he says, I'll send two brothers with you to the playground. What happens if he says, I'm coming to the playground? That's a totally different message. When you say, I'm coming, then the kid feels confident. What are you saying when you're saying, I'm coming? I care. I'm going to be there with you. Hashem says, I care. I'm going to be there with you. The message of Yetziat Mitzrayim that Hashem says, it's me, is Hashem says, you're my kid. I care for you. I'm going to be there for you. Again, the theme we're telling the kid, you're not alone. Yetziat Mitzrayim is the idea. Hashem says, I'm there with you. Hashem says, I'll pass through Egypt on this night. Hashem says, I'll hit the firstborns. I am not a Sarah. I'll punish the gods of Egypt, not through a messenger. Okay, now we're up to the part of the Haggadah where we take out a little bit of wine.
Okay?
Yes, sir.
How is it clear in Egypt that it was not a Malach?
I don't know. I don't know if Hashem wouldn't have told us how we would know the difference. I don't know. I'm saying Hashem told us, but otherwise I don't know how we would know. Okay. So, are you guys with me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We're flying now. We are going to rush through the Seder at this point. Bezrat Hashem, I usually tell my wife that in a half hour, we're at the meal. At this point, saying this is the point where from here on in, we're basically done. Now we're going to run through the 10 plagues. Mm-hmm. We're going to discuss how the 10 plagues can be counted as 50, etc. And we're going to do the Dayenu. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to discuss Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, and do the first part of Hallel. That's our game plan now, which brings us to the end of Magid. And then we sit down for the meal. And then after the meal, we finish the second half of the Seder. You guys with me?
Yes.
Okay. B'yad chazakah, Hashem took out of Mitzrayim with a powerful hand. Zadever. That's a reference to the plague of death. The pasuk says in the Yad Hashem Uyab Mikhasha Basadeva Sim Hamrim Magmunim Abkabatan Dev Kaved Mod, that Hashem brought a plague of pestilence that the Egyptian cattle dropped dead. Uvizron et tuyan, outstretched arms, zocherev, that's Hashem's sword. Hashem said, Jews, come out of Egypt. 4 out of 5 Jews said, we're not up to it. So Hashem came with the sword and the Makkah of Choshech and killed 4 out of 5 Jews. Now the rest of them were said, Jews, come out of Egypt. And they were ready. Uvmora gadol, with great awe, zogilui shchina, Hashem revealed himself. As the verse says, Anisalukin volkach logoyim kevgoyim masot batot moftim, uvimilchama, v'yadchazakov zontiyav, v'moyim kosher sanachem nanachem, v'imtzayim le'ein necha. Hashem says, I did it before your eyes. Has any other nation had God reveal himself to take them out with such miracles and wars? What happened in Mitzrayim was exceptional. Uveotot, with signs, zamateh. We had a staff from the beginning of the 10 plagues. Moshe shows up with a staff, and on the staff is engraved what? Ditzach, Adash, Ve'achav, the acronym for the 10 plagues. Moshe showed up at the very beginning and said, follow my staff. There are going to be 10 plagues coming out, which is what we're about to discuss. Uv moftim, and wondrous things. Now we should all have a plate. Let's give out plates.
You guys want to eat, no? Where are our plates? Thank you, Menachem. Okay. If you're this tired now for the Seder,
just wait until 3 more cups of wine.
Right. Nap. You guys should nap before the Seder. How's that for Matt? Feel well. No one's stealing my Alcoma. I still have. People used to ransom. I used to get notes from the guys. Rabbi Frankenthal, if your Afikoman is worth something to you.
Have the money ready by 7?
Well, I got all kinds of ransom notes. Now no one's even stealing it. I left it easy for you. Okay, no more. Now you're going to.